we have been joined by the delegation from NUM. We will give it to them to take us through their intervention this afternoon. Mr. Gona, dear comrade Gona, would be able to...
We decided that he would come and make those noise here in this chamber. And next to him is comrade Nika Rakau, who is the head of our legal department. And to my far left is comrade Shane Chona. In the media unit in our head office. Without wasting time, Chairperson, I would hand over to Comrade Bailey to just give us briefly what areas are we going to touch in terms of our submission, and then we will get into the body of the submission and also through to the recommendations that we would like this chamber to consider. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and members of the Portfolio Committee, for the opportunity to come and present to you. We are of the opinion that this presentation is long overdue to the Portfolio Committee. Now, our presentation would basically concentrate on drawing your attention to this genocide in the industry. See, when people talk about the fatalities, they actually understate the crisis that we're faced with. This is a genocide that is created by an industry towards its most valued commodity, which is the human resource part thereof. This is a genocide that you can almost compare in real terms to give people an indication of what is going on in the mining industry. The number of deaths that we have faced in the industry is much higher than, in a combined fashion, than World War I and II combined. Now, if that doesn't give you an indication of the crisis that we are faced with, nothing else would. As the workers sell their labor to the industry, it gives nobody veto rights over their limbs and lives. You see, when you sell your labor, every one of us has an expectation to get an earning in return so that we can provide for our families. But in the industry, there's a different norm. And that norm is, when you sell your labor, you give me veto rights over your limbs and your life. And therefore, I may kill you as and when I wish, through my own negligence. And yet society would continue as though it's business as usual. Now we have reached that stage where we are compelled to say that we have a moral and political responsibility to stop this kind of genocide taking place. We are passionate. One thing we must emphasize is that we are very passionate about this industry. This is our livelihood. We are passionate about this industry. We love this industry. But we cannot keep silent on the manner in which it functions. Because we are not murderers. We are a responsible society. One thing that one must draw the attention to, there is a political connotation attached to this, whether you want to deny it or whether you want to acknowledge it. It is in the majority black mine workers that are succumbing in this industry. So, when this happens, one is faced with this question that says, if the industry, let me give you an example, Honorable Chairperson. Let me give you an example. In the platinum industry, for example, for every one day's production lost, the price of the commodity escalates, and you would hear the industry, the platinum industry, say, we lose 40 million per day And yet when you penalize them for killing somebody, you charge them 200,000 rand. Is the work of a black mine worker valued at 200,000 rand? Is that what you attach, the monetary value that you attach to our life? Is that it? Because we can no longer sit back and allow this to continue. Now, we are faced with numerous challenges. Now, I've heard the DG earlier raising the issues of the Mine Health and Safety Act. It has become so intolerable in the industry that when workers exercise their four basic rights, which one of them is to leave a dangerous workplace, they are charged for refusing to exercise the legal instruction and dismissed for that matter. And yet, there is no call that is cried by the Department of Minerals and Energy, who is the custodian of the Mine Health and Safety Act. And the Act goes further and says, anybody that exercises his right in terms of this legislation, and anybody that then discriminates or harasses this person for exercising that right, makes himself guilty of a criminal offense. Nowhere do we hear when people get dismissed for exercising that right, that people are criminally prosecuted for discriminating against them for exercising that right. Now it is about time that the Portfolio Committee takes cognizance of these challenges in the industry, because it goes a bit broader than just people dying. Now every time when there's a disaster, then the focus and attention is drawn to that disaster. Immediately thereafter, there's a relaxation. I always compare, Honorable Chairperson, the lives of mine workers to that of the penguins. And I say, when there was an oil spillage, the whole of society rushed to save the lives of penguins. When there's this massacre by the industry towards human life, everybody keeps silent. Where is our conscience? Why does our conscience not charge us? And why does the industry continue to get away with this mass murder that it commits towards the poor black South Africans? Now you see, Chairperson, I want to give you an indication of the scenario of the Elands Rand, where 3,200 workers were trapped underground. Through and through, it was because of the negligence of maintenance, which was not done, which was supposed to have been done. Now, we stayed there. We had to stay awake for 48 hours. Myself, the minister, Patrice came and went. Had to stay awake for 48 hours. In fact, an indication of how society responds to that is that the whole international media drew its attention to it. The whole national media drew its attention to it. But the minute when people walked out of there to safety, thank God nobody succumbed to that in that incident. But as people walked to safety, you could clearly see it was no longer newsworthy and therefore not important to print and to broadcast. Now, if we attach, if this is how we, the kind of value that we attach to human life, then I become worried over society and over democracy as young as ours. In Kloof, for example, on the 10th of October, three people were killed in an accident. Nothing happened because
the mine manager just shut the operation,
said certain interventions were to be made. There was no Section 57 slapped on them. They did what they had to do. After that, they reopened the mine a couple of days later. On the 18th, they had a joint memorial service to commemorate the lives lost. On the 30th, the very same mine killed two people, just weeks apart. Now, you would have heard last week that they say there's a strike at Kloof. It wasn't a strike. It was mine workers wanting to pay respect to their fallen comrades. And it was then interpreted as a strike, an illegal strike by mine workers. See, Comrade Chairperson, Donald Kircher once said, and I quote him, a man of ability and desire to accomplish can do and can achieve anything. Now this then is our desire, and our desire to change how we do things in this industry. We have that desire, and I believe that the Portfolio Committee also has that desire. Sometimes, in an endeavor to correct something, you've got to be harsh, and you've got to be cruel to be kind, to get the required results. The Portfolio Committee has to look at, as we do our presentation and give you an indication of the crisis that we are faced with. The Portfolio Committee has that political and moral responsibility to then deliberate on this and then come up with interventions, even if those interventions mean that the Mine Health and Safety Act has to be amended to ensure that we do not continue with the manner in which we do things and regard it as business as usual. Surely we have reached a stage where it can't be business as usual, because too many poor black mine workers in the rural areas are dependent on us to make a difference in their lives, to ensure that as their loved ones leave, to go and accumulate a means to put food on the table for them, they do not expect them back in body boxes. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. Honorable Chairperson and members, we will run now through the documents that we hope that it has been distributed to you. Just to contextualize, you know, the issues and put them in point form so that we're able to then, when we arrive at recommendations, that we shall have thrown sufficient light for you to then comprehend with the recommendations that we are making. In our introduction part, obviously, we're stating the non-factor of NUM organizing in mining industry, in the energy industry, as well as in the construction industry. We're also making the point that we also take, you know, struggles forward that would affect the working class in general in our society. And indeed, as Comrade Bailey has demonstrated, we want to make clear that, in our view, these accidents and fatalities are preventable. And we will show why do we say that they are preventable. When we trace the historical background in terms of the mining industry, we acknowledge the fact that since the discovery of minerals in the 18th century in our country, this industry has made tremendous contribution into the economy of the country. Figures speak for themselves in terms of the contribution it made to the GDP. For instance, if you trace it just back from 2003 to now, you would see that the industry's contribution to the GDP has been 6.7%, and in 2004, 6.2%, through to about 16% in the whole. And we also give a picture in terms of how much business has been made in this industry, ranging from the revenue that has been generated through sales that have been made of our commodities, through to the revenue that has been made as a result of the exports. For instance, we're saying in 2005 alone, the sales have moved by 14% to 125.3 billion rand. And also, we're saying that the mineral contributions was about 101.9 billion rand to the total value of the South African exports. That's a real value that has been added by the industry. And we're also painting a picture in as far as the 2006 figures are concerned, that the contribution made by the industry to the GDP is 18%, and 50% of the merchandise exports. About 1 million jobs when you look at the direct and indirect jobs that have been created. Mining industry directly has created something like close to 500,000 jobs on a sustainable basis over this same period. Now, we also are making mention of the fact that about 1.6 trillion rand of the market value of the Johannesburg Stock Exchange is captured by this industry. And the total mineral sales for this year alone, for 2006 alone, is around 295 billion rand, which is an increase of about 34%. Now, all these figures are painting a rosy picture when you take a look at them from the investor point of view. But then, we say this, that the above illustrated growth in this industry and the profit maximization, as it is realized by the figures that we were showing, has been characterized by the high levels of accidents and fatalities. We were saying that what underpins this growth, this marvelous growth and profit making in the industry, on the other hand, people who have made a real contribution to this growth and to this profit margins are dying and are losing their limbs on continuous basis from within this industry. And we're saying this is not a new phenomenon. From the early stages of the mining activities in the country, workers in this industry have been exposed not only to occupational hazards, they were also exposed to unsafe conditions under which they have been working. And then as a result of the levels of death, I think we heard from the TME here that up to 1997, about 1,000 people were killed per year. And from 2000 to date, about 200 people are killed in the industry per year. And we say that this has resulted into society in general, characterizing and seeing this industry as the killing field center within our economy. And this is something that cannot be allowed to continue unabated. To illustrate the point, we're just tracing it back to 1926 from the recorded disasters within the industry. We say this, that 125 workers were killed in 1926 in the Durban Navigation Collieries. Now, 68 workers in the Shobane disaster in 1938, 437 workers in the Brook disaster, so the list goes right through to your biggest disasters in 2000 and 2001. We say these are just recorded disasters that have occurred in the industry. There are many more people that have perished within the industry, as Comrade Bailey has demonstrated. Now, we say this, that therefore, that the nature of these accidents and the causes of these injuries has been determined long time ago. The latest serious investigation was through a Lyon Commission, which was commissioned in 1994. It came out very clearly that major contributing factors to these accidents and fatalities have been the rock falls, the rock burst, and the fall of ground. And all of this has been also linked to the seismic events that are taking place in the mines. And then we say that this condition is preventable, particularly when you look at the available technology, both within the country, that needs further, exploitation, and also when you draw experiences from other countries. For instance, if you draw the experiences and analyze the health and safety records of countries such as Australia and Japan, you would be able to see that their rates of accidents and deaths are low. And the question begs, why would South African mining industry not match those countries and even better, the records of those countries? And the only reason we see is that the problem we have in our country is that business prioritizes profit maximization, and there is no sufficient investment that is made on the health and safety area, so that we can be able, whilst we are increasing our levels of production, we are increasing our sales, we are increasing the revenues that are generated, and increasing our profits, at the same time we plow back to the industry and find relevant and sufficient technology to prevent the reoccurrence of these accidents and deaths. And we say this, that this can be done by means of the industry spending sufficient money to then buy the technology that is available abroad, or use the available technology within the country and further research in order to improve on the current technology that we have. Now, Comrade Bailey has already painted the picture in terms of the current situation, but we want to reemphasize this by giving you numbers that talk to the current situation in as far as these accidents and deaths are concerned. We say that this is a daily, if not a weekly, occurrence in the mining industry. And indeed, this is indicative of an industry in crisis situation. And in fact, as NUM, we are calling for this industry to be declared as a crisis industry, because this amount of deaths must at some point come to an end, and that point is now, that we must arrest the situation, and this industry must be declared emphatically as a disaster, is a disaster-prone kind of an industry. And the irony that we are raising here is that, as Comrade Bailey has alluded, is that the mining bosses don't seem to be perturbed at all about these deaths. To them, it's business as usual. And the only conclusion that you can draw from that kind of a reaction is that, of course, of the black lives being cheap in South Africa. As they were cheap then, at the time of the colonial situation, they were cheap at the time of the apartheid situation, they are continuously being seen to be cheap, even within our democratic dispensation. And this is an anomaly in a democratic situation that we are in as a country. We say this, that this matter must indeed come to an end. And we say, given the high rate of the unemployment in the country, which is one of the reasons why the mine bosses are not perturbed, is because it is easy for them to replace workers who have died. We've got high rate of unemployment. There are many people who are queuing in the gates of the mines. And as a result, it's easy for them to just take. And the situation now has been exacerbated by the problems that we see in our neighbors, such as Zimbabwe, where people are flocking out of those countries into here. And therefore, cheap labor is easily available. Therefore, they can replace people who have died as a result of these accidents. The table that we have inserted there shows the figures that the DMB was talking to, tracing it back from year 2000 to now, 2007. And indeed, we have categorized them in terms of the fatalities as well as in terms of the injuries, so that we can then Parliament can see a clear picture. That's only taking year 2000 to now, what kind of a situation are we faced with. And of course, when you summarize that picture, you see that over this period, about 1,926 workers have perished in this industry. And about 34,800 workers have lost their lives in this industry. They've been injured in this industry over the same period. And when you take that and you translate it into the real situation out there of workers and their dependents, family members, you would see that about 9,630 family members who are dependent on these breadwinners that have died are now suffering as we speak. Again, in terms of those that were injured, about 174,000 people are affected as a result of the changed income situation, because some of these people are permanently or partially disabled. And this, we're just taking a simple formula of a family of five members. If you take your two African situation of family members that are beyond five, you are talking of more people that are affected as a result of these continuous fatalities and then accidents in the industry. We're saying the situation is more grievous than it appears to be and than it is made to be by the mainstream media in the country. Now, we're giving you the figures in terms of analysis of August, where in terms of the rock falls, in terms of the seismic events, a number of people have perished. We're categorizing August, September, and in October, I think Comrade Bailey has already properly clarified what happened in 1 month. Apart from the 3,200 people in Elephant Mine, the other people in the Kloof Mine have died within a short space of time. We're talking just last month, which shows and tells us that the problem is continuing. And of course, in November, we are expecting that we must count other deaths. We must count other injuries. For family members of people that are dying, for the loved ones of these workers, it is not just numbers. It is human beings that are lost unnecessarily through, you know, them going out to seek livelihood in the industry, which is, of course, it's their right that they must go out and seek livelihood. But then the conditions under which they work must be put in such a manner that they allow them to indeed look after their families. Now, Chairperson, we get to the matter that we were happy when you I don't want to use the term cross-examine the department on, but it's just the manner in which you raised questions with the department around actions that are supposed to be taken against those that are responsible, because at some point the buck must stop somewhere, with somebody held accountable for negligible actions that have taken place in the industry. We are making a point here that as a union we are concerned that legal actions that must be instituted against mine managers, against mine directors, or anyone who is designated as an accounting officer are not taken. This is after an inquest has been held. In some instances, this inquest will be presided over by magistrates, and findings will be made that this mine is have been negligent, and as a result of its negligent actions, a number of people have died. And this manager or this officer has been negligent. No action has been taken. And we say this, that it's not because these matters have not been reported to the Department of Justice and Constitutional Affairs. The Directorate of Public Prosecution has got this information. Every time when the inquest has been completed, the information gets passed to them for them to take a decision for prosecution. But all we see the NPA does is that they would care to pour huge resources in pursuit of an individual, one individual across the country, on matters that where there is no life that has been lost, nobody has been killed by this individual, and on matters where there is no malicious damage to any property that has been caused. Over a period of 7 years, if you count numbers in terms of monies that have gone and then human resources that have gone into those kinds of, persecutions, you would see that which we are complaining about here is just a drop in the ocean. It was all we called for. A magistrate who presided over an inquest has put, you know, the report into a legal format so that a prosecutor can take a decision to prosecute the directorate. But all what we see the NPA does is to call these huge resources in pursuit of individuals for their own reasons, not for the reasons that, you know, the country would be concerned with. And in this instance, so that we don't make a general statement, we are referring to a case against the Deputy President of the African National Congress that for over a period of 7 years, everything has been concentrated by NPA into persecuting this individual. Here, we are talking about people who kill people through their negligence, and nothing gets done. And we say this is an anomaly. in our democracy. It's an anomaly of the highest proportion that we think that the NPA owes the country at large an explanation in as far as this is concerned. And again, we're making this point that people who are decision makers in these institutions still have this mentality that black life is cheap. We can see this even in judgments that are passed in court. You don't have to go, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to see that black life is cheap even within the justice system in the country. And we say this is a situation that also must be halted. We are drawing reference to this house that the constitution of this country, the constitution of the Republic of South Africa, guarantees equal justice for all the people of this country. And the Bill of Rights underscores, you know, this important principle. Therefore, the judicial system in the country is expected to uphold these constitutional imperatives. But 13 years into a hard-fought democracy, we still have citizens who are yearning for justice to be done and be seen to be done. Workers and their families are beginning to lose hope in justice system in our country. Increasingly, it is becoming evident that poor people do not have access to justice and is seen as a preserve of those sections of our society that are wealthy and that are affluent. We make this submission on the basis that workers and their families, the families of those workers who have passed away, are expected to hire legal practitioners in order for their cases, for there to be follow-ups on their cases. And these are the funds that they do not have to pay for the lawyers to can assist them, or the private investigators to can assist them, so that, you know, justice can be done on their part. To further substantiate this point, we are putting up a table which places some of these cases. We have not put everything onto this paper, but we have just traced some of very clear, straightforward cases that from year 2000, there have been inquests and there have been recommendations that have been made. There is no action that is taken by the Directorate of Public Prosecution. You would in your own time go through that list, but that is to basically substantiate the point that we are making. And we don't know whether this is the result of the capacity within the Justice Department, but in our view, it is not that. It is as a result of quite serious negligence on the part of justice being meted out as far as black lives are concerned. And in this instance, food industry is allowed to go scot-free on the atrocities that we believe they have committed. We also make the point, Jefferson, in terms of also what the department has responded to about the legislative framework, that we are concerned that the penalties that are meted out in the course of some of these accidents, when there has been admission of guilt, for example, and so forth, that the amount, the maximum is about 200,000, as Comrade Bailey has explained. And to us, that doesn't serve as a deterrent factor at all. In fact, industries have begun a practice of budgeting for these penalties. So to them, it's just business as usual, and therefore they can afford 200,000. Even they can afford 30 million for that matter. But we're saying that the law must be strengthened in that field, so that it's not only this monetary, you know, fee that must be payable, but also, you know, imprisonment of a person that is found to have been responsible in as far as, you know, the application of their responsibilities are concerned in overseeing the matters of health and safety. Maybe then, when the accounting officers are imprisoned, then they will begin to realize the depth of problems that they are causing. And indeed, they will be able to then find the solutions that we are talking about, which we are prepared to work with them in any event in finding those solutions. Now, Honorable Chairperson, we have put together some key recommendations for the House to consider. The recommendations are that we're calling for a commissioning of a research, both within the country and abroad, on the available technology on early detection of the seismic events, the preventative measures that can be taken against rock falls and the fall of the ground, the adequate escape routes that must be created within the mines, and sufficient ventilation to in situations of accidents occurring, the periodic geological inspection and adequate protective equipment that must be given by the industry. And this research, we're making an appeal to Parliament that it must be undertaken by an independent professional body or institution. And that body or institution must be accountable to Parliament. It must report here. Because you will find out that there are institutions, some of which are under the auspices of government. The problem there is that they will produce reports and make recommendations. No action gets taken on those recommendations. We can go back to the history in terms of CSIR investigations and then research that has been done. No actions have been taken. And we believe that it's high time that a research that is sanctioned by this body and the institution that will be accountable to this body, then will make things to move in terms of the implementation of whatever recommendations that they shall come up with. And we also are making the recommendation that legislation must be strengthened in the areas that provide for fines and imprisonment. We have already spoken to that point. And a legal provision must be made for Parliament, for the first time in our country, to summon for the appearance of the Chamber of Mines, the mine houses, and those individual mines that are not affiliated to these bodies, to basically come and appear before Parliament. Those companies where the health and safety records seem to be deteriorating on a continuous basis, like the company that Comrade, like the mine that Comrade Bailey referred to, that in 1 month there have been a number of events that have resulted on similar basis in the deaths of workers. We believe, therefore, that time has arrived that they must come and account to the nation through this institution. In terms of those things that are taking place. And we're making also a very bold recommendation, honorable members, that also the legislation must be made in such a manner that it enables this august house to take decisions, to nationalize mines that are not repentant in terms of their negligible actions. Because sometimes you will find a situation where fines are imposed, where people are called to account, but still the matter continues unabated. And we believe that in that instance, such mines must be nationalized so that workers themselves, with the assistance of the nation through their government, they can then take full responsibility of their lives and their working conditions in the mines. Maybe we can see a better situation, because they would be able to take decisions that would better save and protect their lives during their working situation in those mines once they are in public hands, because they would be held responsible as far as the occurrence of accidents are concerned. And therefore we're making this not lightly, but we're making this strongly, that once a mine continues to be negligent on continuous basis, and they are not prepared to take heed on instructions, recommendations of changes that must be effected in terms of health and safety, then that mine must be nationalized. Those people who own and run that mine are not fit to own and run such mines. Therefore, it must be given back to the people of the country so that they can run it for themselves. And we're saying also that as part of our recommendations, that the Chamber of Mines, the mine houses, and the individual mines that are not affiliated must be compelled to review the kind of training that they offer on health and safety to both the health and safety representatives and to the employees. The content and the mechanisms must include some form of guidelines on risk assessment, so that these workers are enabled at a very infant level to can detect and then report what they could see as hazardous situations and conditions. If they are given those guidelines, they would then be able to then raise the alarm in terms of the situation they see, whether underground or on surface. And also we are recommending that Parliament must pay serious attention to the skills shortage and the capacity of the mine inspectorate, because we believe that this compromises the spirit and the objectives of the Mining Health and Safety Act. We're saying this that we do have inspectorates, but they are seriously challenged in as far as the capacity is concerned. There are so many mines across the country, and there are so few people within that directorate. And we believe that if Parliament would give a clear instruction to DME that it must work on the capacity of this directorate, then we may see some improved results. In a sense that, for now, the mine inspectorate responds to accidents and fatalities. It's a responsive, you know, kind of a directorate. But we're looking for you know, for a directorate that will be proactive. In many instances, they just pay unannounced visits in mines in order to inspect the condition, so that they can then be able to see whether, first and foremost, the legislation is being complied with, and secondly, whether workers in those mines are trained sufficiently to can be able to understand, and indeed, whether there are geological reports that are kept in terms of the early detection of possible seismic events and so forth. So we want a turnaround situation where the directorate is not only responsive, but also proactive. And it can't do that in our own assessment, in the current form in which it is. Therefore, that's why we call that it must be capacitated in such a manner that it is able to meet those challenges. We also make in our last recommendation a submission that this House or a relevant portfolio committee, but as long as it is Parliament, must indeed summon NPA to basically come and give account of what causes these delays. Because honourable members, believe us, it's not only the mining industry. You have got industries across the country where there have been accidents, where there have been fatalities, although at a lower scale than the mining industry. But the fact remains is that there have been inquests, there have been inquiries, and there have been recommendations and clear findings for prosecution. No action gets taken. No action gets taken whatsoever, except in those families that are fortunate enough to have some funds to then employ extraordinary legal assistance in order for their cases to be followed up. Therefore, we say this, that we have a serious problem with this Department of Justice in as far as, you know, taking actions on worker, on health and safety matters are concerned. And in conclusion, Chairperson and the members, we hope that we didn't give you information that lacks in terms of the quality and the necessary data, so that you are able to then get a clear picture of what is going on in this industry, and you are able to then take the appropriate decisions that you see fit in order to solve the situation. And lastly, Honorable Chairperson, we want to make this announcement that we have made through the media earlier on, that as a result of the continuous occurrence of these accidents and these fatalities, as a union, NUM, we have taken a clear decision to embark on a national strike. The form and the nature of that strike will take we are discussing. We are in a serious process of consulting our members. The intention is to strategy to basically take it beyond the mining industry. As we have three sectors within the union, the intention would be that we will call on the energy workers, we will call on the construction workers to join in on the band work so that the health and safety matters are cutting across. And also we are intending in the upcoming Kosatu Central Executive Committee to table this matter so that we can call for sympathy action by the Federation as a whole to highlight the plight of workers across the industries on the health and safety situation. Honourable Chairperson, let us thank you, but my colleagues, if there are areas that I've left out, they would add and then take any questions that members would have on us. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable Chairman. Thanks as well to my comrade leader, comrade Fred Kola. I think the comrade is touched on the key aspects which are of concern to us as AUM in light of the trend of the fatalities we're experiencing in our country. And it is quite of paramount importance for us to ask ourselves as to why are these big mining companies, when they come and operate in our country, there is a large number in terms of fatalities. However, when they operate in Australia, for instance, in Japan, for instance, the numbers is less. I think that's a very critical point of departure in terms of comparison to other international countries. And the other areas of concern is the recommendations that are available in our country in terms of projects that are conducted through SIMREC, recommending safer ways to mine effectively without compromising the safety and the health of our workers. We see a trend of implementing by the mining companies. Implementing those recommendations is very, very low. There is no voluntary implementation to indicate the commitment of ensuring the safety of our workers. And therefore, we ask ourselves in terms of the attitude of the mining industries as to whether are they only for the profits or also for the lives of our people, of our country. And therefore, we strongly say we would like to see a movement towards the implementation on the most critical, primarily on the most critical projects that will address issues of seismicity, issues of force, and other wide range issues. And currently, if you look at our presentation, it is concentrated mostly on the safety. There's another issue that is a monster that we don't know that how much are we dealing with, the issue of health, the diseases. We did not have an updated database in terms to tell us in terms of silicosis. What is this monster? What is the magnitude of this monster? A wide range of diseases are coming up. We are silent about them. The Real Commissions made recommendations and it made the workers' rights as part of the recommendations. And we see the industry not respecting or giving detail to those recommendations, the workers' rights, the right to information, the right to representation, the right to education and training. And we ask ourselves as to whether is the industry responding in a manner that will indicate to us that it's committed, much is committed in profit making. It is committed to ensuring our workers' safety and health. And therefore, a number of scenarios, a number of processes or reactions that we get even from the mining industries, they continue to pose such challenges to us. I'll give one example. Last month, we had a deliberation in the Matlosana area, previously known as Sixto. And one of the big mining companies, with all due respect, if I don't mention the name, they requested for Section 54 to be uplifted. Section 54 is when The Inspectorate of the Minerals and Energy has served the notice to stop and act on a condition of operation in order to ensure, for the mining company to ensure that the health and safety of the person is not compromised. They had to come and present in front of the principal inspector, the labor, let me put it in that way. On certain issues that were indicated in that notice, and mainly revolving around the issue of the risk assessment. And the response, the presentation that we got in terms of the risk assessment was not giving any indication in terms of the commitment. An independent contractor had done an analysis and investigation and provided that to the mining company on Sunday. On Monday, the company wanted to come and present for the Minerals and Energy to uplift that 654. The risk assessment was presented, not signed. It was presented on no later date. The report was not talking to some of the challenges or some of the causes of the fatality in question at the time. And therefore you ask yourself, is this presentation just one of the steps just to make sure that Section 54 is uplifted without necessarily going into the root of the problem to say what is it that caused this fatality so that it doesn't happen in the future? These are some of the attitudes that clearly demonstrate to us that the attitude of the mining industry it compromises the health and safety of our workers and for us it's a bit of a concern. There's a whole lot of issues probably we continue to raise on them. Thank you for the share.
Chairperson, just before we conclude, I think it's important that we emphasize the figures that are highlighted here is basically an understatement, because we have not taken into cognizance those that have died of occupational diseases, and there are many. So these are just the accidents that we are reflecting here. The figure could change drastically over the years, even over the 12-month period. So it's important that we highlight that, so there's no misunderstanding that it is only, these are only the figures that the industry is accountable for. They are accountable for much higher figures than is the situation. Thank you.
No, thanks, Chair. We will give Dr. Barker an opportunity and perhaps interact, because you see, this is a matter which has been with the committee for some time now. We have our own systems. We would have hoped that by this time would be seeing the result of the summit we proposed some time ago, which I think that something needs to be done as it relates to the entire system here and how things operate and the whole issue of funding and so on. We are not there today, but just to say that as the matter is raised now, it has always been one of those sore points for us as a committee, which we have wanted to deal with in a much more comprehensive way. Dr. Barker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you also for the indulgence of the committee to allow us to speak. We unfortunately only heard about this meeting yesterday, so last night. Yesterday you also pointed out that we should prepare a written submission, and last night as I was working on my computer unfortunately crashed, so I don't have a written presentation, but I can submit something to the committee in the next day or so. The safety performance of the industry is certainly a matter of great concern, especially the fact that this year we are not moving towards achieving those targets. Those targets are the international best practice targets. We're not trying to go to what's happening in China, because then our safety record will deteriorate even more. we're trying to achieve the best international practice for of mining companies, and Australia has been mentioned. The difference between South Africa and Australia is that Australia has very shallow mines. So from that point of view, it is a challenge for us to achieve that best practice, but we certainly need to get to that best practice. Our mines are the deepest in the world, and that does cause certain challenges for us. The reference to Japan's safety record is a bit perplexing, because Japan doesn't have mines, so the fact that they've got very low fatalities in mining is therefore no surprise whatsoever. As far as we are concerned, it's certainly not business as usual. As we speak now, the chief executives of the company are meeting in Johannesburg specifically to discuss safety, the issue of safety. What can we do? What needs to be done? They're meeting right now as we are speaking. And I'd just like to outline a few of the initiatives that we are taking and some possible other routes that we should also think about. First of all, the issue of seismicity and rock bursts has quite correctly been identified by the NUM as one of the major causes of fatalities, especially in gold mining. So that's the first issue, seismicity and rock bursts. I can announce today that the industry has about a month ago appointed an international panel of experts to investigate the issue of seismicity and rock bursts. Mr. Bobby Godsall, whom you all know and who has recently retired from the industry, has been appointed as chairperson of this international panel of experts, where we are going to, amongst others, get experts from countries that do experience seismicity. For instance, California would be one of them, and also some other countries, to assist in making sure that we've got the best possible information and early warning system, whatever needs to be done to address this as a major cause of the problems. Another issue, a second issue that I'd like to mention is the enforcement. A lot has been said about enforcement. The DG referred to legal challenges against the department, which is a problem for them. The chief inspector has indicated recently in the Mine Health and Safety Council that he wants to develop enforcement guidelines. These enforcement guidelines would be particularly important both for the inspectorate but also for the mines, so that they get some guidance as to the accident investigations, as to disaster management. What do you do if there is a disaster? How do you enforce the legislation? We fully support those guidelines being issued as quickly as possible, and we think that it will also assist the mines. There will be clarity as to what should be done, and that we can work together to make sure that the law is enforced, so that it's not a them and us issue. This cannot be a them and us issue. We must jointly address this as a major problem for everyone. We've indicated to the chief inspector that we're willing to put in resources to help him, whether it's independent persons, whether it's persons that we second, to help the chief inspector with that. So that is the second issue. The third issue relates to the outcome of the search. The NUM has also referred to SIMRAC, which is the Safety in Mining Research Advisory Committee. SIMRAC has about 50 million rand per annum available for it to do research in mining. And we agree that in some cases they produce these voluminous big reports which are not properly implemented. What we've decided, and this was a month ago also, is that from the industry side, we are going to make available, each of the commodities are going to make available two full-time people to the chamber to help with the implementation of best practice. There's a lot of best practice around. This company is strong on this issue, that company is strong on that issue, there's some best practice, but it's not implemented, it's not properly adopted. So we've said that let's now concentrate on the adoption of best practice, and let's make people available from the companies to help us with that adoption of best practice. So these people, in addition to those 8 people, each company must also make a person available about a quarter of that person's time to help with the adoption of best practice, so that we can make sure that the information is spread and adopted throughout the industry. That's a third initiative. A fourth initiative is at the leadership level. What we have decided is that as Executive Council of the Chamber, we will be meeting on a regular basis to discuss amongst ourselves, amongst the leadership, because if we're only going to address this issue if we show leadership at the throne, right from the top, at leadership level, we're going to discuss, have a regular item on our Executive Council meetings where we're going to discuss the safety and health issue, where we're going to share experiences, where we're going to try and learn from each other and develop new initiatives. What we also could consider as another issue in this regard, with regard to the leadership, and the DG is unfortunately left, but the Chief Inspector is still amongst us. We are wondering whether all the principals should not meet on a more regular basis. Whether we shouldn't get, for instance, the minister to chair a meeting, or the DG, on a regular basis, or perhaps we should reconstitute the Mine Health and Safety Council to be a meeting of principals to discuss the issue of health and safety, so that in that way we can show leadership to everyone. To deal with some of the specific recommendations by the NUM, they indicated that legal provisions should be made for Parliament to summons for appearance the Chamber of Mines. Mr. Chairman, we'll come with the greatest of pleasure. You needn't have a legal provision. You can just phone us and say that we've got to appear before you, and we will be we will come and give evidence, and we'll encourage our members, member companies, to come and give evidence. When it relates to a specific incident, obviously it should be the member companies. When it relates to mine and health and safety in general, then the chamber could assist. And we invite also the committee to come and visit the chamber, or we can send a full delegation to give you a full presentation about some of these initiatives that we are taking, that we hope will make a difference as far as the safety is concerned. The NUM recommendation about the training to health and safety representatives, we think is an excellent recommendation. That we should make sure that these health and safety representatives are better utilized, that we can make sure that they know what to look out for, that they know when to act, that they can ring the alarm bells if there is a problem. Also, the skill shortage of the mines inspectorate, we certainly can agree with that. We think that is also a very welcome recommendation by the NUM. The NUM has also referred to their protest action, or their national strike. I think any activity that brings about a change in behavior would be welcomed. If it's just a national strike and the next day everybody goes back to work and it's the same as it was before, then it's a waste of time. We need a change in behavior right from the top to the bottom. I think, yes, safety is the primary responsibility of management. That is correct. But I think it is also the responsibility of everybody on that mine, right from the top to the bottom. If the management pursues profit at all costs, then that is not engaging in safe behavior, and that it must be addressed. If the supervisor says we're only pursuing production and he ignores an unsafe type of equipment, then that is not engaging in safe behavior. But it also goes further. If a person is disciplined, if a worker is disciplined, as the numbers mentioned, for withdrawing labor, if there's an unsafe situation, then that is not engaging in safe behavior. But getting on to one of these very unsafe taxis, that is also a mindset that we must change. That is also not engaging in safe behavior. Having unprotected sex is not engaging in safe behavior. I think we must, from the top to the bottom, in all our actions, we must get a new mindset. We must engage in safe behavior with regard to everything. Yes, I agree, management is primarily responsible for safety. But we have kilometers and kilometers of underground mining taking place. We can't be everywhere at the same time, and each and every worker must be empowered to identify unsafe circumstances or conditions and must be able to alert management with regard to that, but the worker himself or herself must also not engage in unsafe behavior. So in that regard we can work together. And hopefully the audit that has been requested by President Mbeki will be an opportunity where we can also highlight some of these issues, where we can really make a difference. We have made a difference a few years ago with regard to the new Mine Health and Safety Act, and I think we all agree that things seem to be stagnating now. We need to come with new initiatives that we can really make a step change, a major difference as far as safety in the industry is concerned. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And that list is cut. I have the Lucas, Mamatia, Sad. Yeah, in that order, after Lua would come, then and we'll just wrap up our discussion of Lucas, Matsilela, Mashaba, Tinto, and Lua.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think this is a very important presentation from both sides. And I just mentioned the summit. That is so important, and I don't think we will touch it. And the other thing that we've got to realize, the mining industry is not a new industry. It's an old, old industry. But what we seem to be doing all the time, we are reacting to problems. I think we need, if I hear correctly, that we need to go forward. And it's unfortunate that there's two sides to this here. It's a high-risk industry, and on the one side it's very high risk, in the other side it's profit-driven. And we have to try and balance these two. Because people, when you're profit-driven, you try to get the maximum out of the minimum input. Because that's what raises your profit. And I think this is... In Australia, in Canada, in these places, there's a lot of mechanization. And whereas here in our country, we still use manual labor. So sometimes it's difficult to make a difference. There's a mine in Canada, a gold mine. You can count the people on duty. It's all machines that are moving up and down. So the situation is slightly different. And I think one death is one too many. So we cannot. Then we spoke about looking at the controls. What does the Council of Geoscience do? Hasn't it got some performance in this, looking at quakes and tremors and all these things? Why don't we use those resources which we have in hand I think those are the kind of things. Sometimes we look outside our capabilities. When we have something, we still want to reinvent the wheel. And I see there is going to be an international forum, a panel of experts. And of course, believe you me, those panels of experts will take all the cream. And what is the result? And let's hope it's going to be fair that the results from those panels of experts will help the people, those who are really suffering. Not those panel of experts come from all over the world, say blah, 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 and walk away and just take all the money, all the profit. And we really have to be very careful. I just directly to the Chamber of Mines. Nationalizing the mines. Are we not going to be still profit driven? Because if we nationalize and still remain profit driven, I don't think we'll solve the problem. Sometimes it's difficult for us as human beings to learn. When we look at the events happening there, we say, oh, yeah, no, they're making too much money, we're going to do this. But when we get into the situation, we do exactly the same thing. And I'm saying this from experience. Us, black people, we criticize people. But when we got to the positions of creating jobs, we do exactly the same thing. We start dismissing people. We treated them as a state. So when you nationalize, let's nationalize properly and look at the interests of the people.
Thank you, Chairperson. Although Honorable Lucas covered my question, but I would have put it this way to the Chamber of Mines that the Council for Geoscience had this to say, and it's also in the report that they've got a 24-hour mechanism of watching the monitoring the seismic events that would occur. So I would also go back to what Honorable Lucas said. Why can't we look at geoscience? Because they've got the tools to look for such things. And also, Council for Geoscience is doing this, is it not sending it to the Chamber of Mines or to the mine houses to be able to know that such things are going to occur, incidents or accidents, whatever, on such and such a time? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Firstly, one needs to commend the NUM for the gallant strides that they have put in trying to protect their members. Whilst their fight could not mean that their members' safety is well taken care of because they're working from outside their environment. But one wanted to check just on a few things. The first one is as to whether, because I'm taking for granted that NUM has got softwares that are involved throughout with the members who are passing over information, who are interacting with labor, the organization itself, as to whether it is the very same field from the softwares that this is the situation as they painted it. The second one is, how is the relationship between NUM and the industry itself? Is it cordial? The bosses of these mines, do they sit around the table with them and they raise concerns and public, are they honest if it happens? Are they honest with their debates that they are aiming at trying to deal with issues, taking some of their proposals seriously? And I'm hoping in such incidents, it could also include looking at the mining companies' strategic plan, where you could be able to see each mine is looking at decreasing the accidents and looking at the issue of mine safety in terms of putting money in there and also in terms of contingencies. The other one is that it's unfortunate that the NUM did not indicate to us on the prosecution side. You've indicated that there are these cases that are outstanding that seems not to be dealt with. But on the other hand, it would have been nice for us to compare with the prosecution. Maybe you put in those numbers against maybe non-prosecution. Maybe there's nothing that has been prosecuted before. But at least we need to know on that one. I'm not sure on the inspectorate side. I know that in terms of the agenda, NUM was supposed to have came in first before the department. Now you may find that certain issues are coming out here, and some of these issues could have been raised during the time when the department was presenting. And I know that they've been in the agenda in the previous meeting, and it has not happened that we meet with them beforehand, because some of these issues could have made more questions being asked and more seriousness from our side. And I'm hoping that with this presentation, we could be able to also check on ourselves as the portfolio committee. Are we also serious about dealing with these issues? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. My is just two comments. One is on the ex-miners. When we were in Bizana in September, when Parliament was in Bizana, we met a lot of people, the ex-miners, who are, some of them are very ill, and some of them are really suffering on a day-to-day basis. Is NUM doing also something about those people? Because mainly they're in the Eastern Cape. Also, it's a problem of skills, because those people were not skilled when they were working in mines, and now they're languishing there doing nothing. And the DME is also saying they've got a staff shortage and skills shortage, especially in this department, the mine health and safety. And the second comment is the looming strike. I don't think this will be the answer to embark on the strike, because those people really will go on a strike, and we know that the strike also, there can be an incident which are affecting the very staff that we were trying to protect. I think we need to embark on a more valuable action rather than the strike. I'm not saying the strike is useless, but I'm saying we just need to look whether that is the right direction to take when these problems are when we are encountered with these problems on a daily life. Thank you.
Chairperson, this room is electrified by the onslaught at the time. Comrade Red and Comrade Peter, I don't know what did they eat this morning, but it was, I'm telling you, it was lightning all over. Those guys are fighting, and they are fighting for their members, the right of their members. Chairperson, I've been sitting here, and you were right to refer to our intended summit. I've been listening to Dr. Baker for almost now a decade. They've moved on, but the problem is not solved. Listening to Peter, the problem is getting worse. He even said, compare Peter's with the life of our human beings. really bad. And you listen to the radio, you check the media, and you ask yourself, I just perused this document of theirs. And you know, I was moved by one very important accident, the Valdez disaster, which does not reflect here. And what was the cost of that simple mistake? So therefore, Chairperson, I must, in fact, say that we need to look drastically into this matter. We are fortunate, Chairperson, come also. We'll be having a workshop where some of the issues can be raised in order to build up, to Lumpopo. To build up to Lumpopo, where we are going to build in measures to protect the issue of this comrade. Legislation, no nice talks, CODESA, summons, workshops. It doesn't solve the problem. Let's come up with legislation. 200,000 rand is not the life of our people. Those are the kinds of things that we need to look at. So, Chair, we must try to look at, because also, what is not mentioned, some of these companies, and Baba Lucas mentioned it, again, to our own people, they are more conservative than the former owners of the mines. Our own people. Some of them are ignorant. Some of them are defiant. So what can we do? We must just come up with legislation, empowerment, empower the acts. Those that are there must be amended to such an extent that really we have to work hand in hand with the business, with labor, and with the other role players involved, government. We must make sure that task groups must not just operate in a vacuum one side. They must come here, let us chop and change what we want, what we've heard, and what in fact is important for our people. And therefore, Chairperson, would like to propose that we must start to get more involved in this kind of talks, so that this kind of atmosphere must be a little bit, we must try to water it down when the time has. And we, Chair, I know that you are very strong, that you can lead. You can lead the way I like you. You can lead us. Take us through this quick wire, Chairperson. Let us solve this problem of this comrades. It's really serious, comrades. It's really serious. The lives of our people are at stake here. Thank you.
Well, thanks, comrades. Low. I think most of you members were expressing viewpoints on the matter, perhaps with an exception of you, Mahlaba, who asked the question, Tindo, and so on. But most of the things here are views which members are expressing. Perhaps we can take the very direct question, I think there are very few, so that we then see that what then is to be done from here or not.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think there's two or three areas that need a response. First and foremost, I think it's critical that one responds. You've raised the issue of the summit. Unfortunately, Chairperson, you see, the problem with these summits, we've been having summits. We walk out of those summons. The industry does not put its money where it's not placed. We go and sit in that hall, we take resolution. The one poor thing about those resolutions, they are not binding on anybody. So therefore, it becomes a talk show. So if we go to that summit must then be of such a nature that it compels the parties to abide by the decisions of that summit. Then the summit, by all intents and purposes, is an acceptable thing. Secondly, the issue of seismicity. You are absolutely correct, honorable member. Seismicity can be detected. It's not a situation where the industry is not aware of. It is a situation where the industry, the mining houses, get alarms in advance and ignores them. You see? It's about utilizing it to your benefit and utilizing it with the seriousness and commitment of wanting to prevent. That is where the problem lies. The problem lies with the industry not really taking the lives of our members seriously. Because they can warn in advance about the seismic event that takes place, because there's a build-up in terms of seismicity. I'm not a rock scientist, but I had the fortunateness of a colleague who was my deputy chairperson, who was a geologist by profession. And we also had interactions with the guys from geoscience. There's a build-up to an event. You get warning signs with these build-ups. Now, instead of evacuating, we ignore, hoping that things will turn out for the better, and they turn out for the worse. You see? We are productivity mind-driven instead of being safety-driven in our mindset. So that's where the problem lies. The one thing I cannot and do not want to accept about the industry, we have a wonderful relationship. One of robust interaction, one of agreeing perfectly with one another and not taking it personally. So we have a relatively good relationship. As long as the interests of our members are not compromised, we will have a relationship with anybody. We don't mind having a relationship. But the one thing about the industry, and I think I must raise that, is the problem with the industry and the experience with the industry is, unfortunately, the industry, when there's legislation, they would pay consultants thousands of rands, sometimes millions, to help them to bypass this legislation, instead of paying them for one good reason why they should implement it. You see? And that's where the problem lies, Honorable Chairperson. This thing of international forums, or what do they call it? This international panel of experts. Your biggest expert is those that are affected and that are doing the job. Nobody else. Experience is the best teacher and the best university. You can have all these experts come from nowhere in the world, and they will help you zero, because the people that are going to be affected and what they decide in a boardroom and what happens in practice in the workplace are two totally different things. There's a right in terms of the act, the right to participation and the right to information. Why must somebody like Mr. Bobby Godson and people from Australia sit on that panel? Why not take these workers, these safety reps, who have the right to participation and information, and make them the panel of experts? Because that's where your answers lie. It's the reason why there's a deterioration since 1996 when the Act was promulgated to date. The reason why there's a decline in the safety. In getting the numbers down, not in terms of decline in terms of the accidents. Why there's a decline in achieving our objectives is for the sole purpose that in the beginning, the Lyon Commission's recommendation was joint committees. There's a deliberate attempt to move away from those joint committees and you make it a management prerogative. It is within that context that it has become a situation where you have a worsening situation. Our strike, I want to emphasize to this House, through you, Honorable Chairperson, the NUM is not strike hunger. We have tried all mechanisms and interventionist approaches. We've had interactions with the Chamber, we've had interactions with independent mining houses,
As we walk out of there, they present these nice papers to us. As we walk out of there, things happen in the workplace, people get killed. We have now reached a stage where we say, let's talk and let's start making, first and foremost, the problem with the industry and the plight that we are faced with is that the more people die, if I take a knife and I knife Comrade Honorable Low to death with my knife, it is a criminal offense, I will get prosecuted. If I kill 258 people to date and I don't get prosecuted, naturally there's no deterrence. So therefore, first and foremost, we want to draw the attention of the general public to that strike to show them the crisis and make them understand it better. And then we will sit together with one another looking at mechanisms of resolving it. In terms of the safety rest, I can give you an example of what happens to the safety rest. They're being victimized. Last week when I went to the memorial service in Kloof, the full-time health and safety representative, after there was an attempt to withdraw people from a dangerous workplace, when they withdrew themselves, the management threatened to charge them because in the memorial service, one comrade said, we have become beggars, we get charged as and when the world arises by management. Now, there was a threat to charge them. The full-time health and safety representative, in terms of his power, approved to him by the Mine Health and Safety Act, went to the operations officer and also the mine captain and said to him, look, we hear there's this rumor that you want to charge our people for withdrawing. They assaulted him in that office. So much so that the door was broken down. After they realized that they had assaulted him, they laid a charge against him for assaulting two white people. He was alone when he went to see them. He got assaulted. So there's no relationship. There's a relationship at our level. But in terms of what happens in the workplace, it is productivity driven, and you won't change the mindset of the industry. Unfortunately, I agree with the comrade that said that black people exploit even more. But you see, unfortunately, sometimes black people do as the white people have indoctrinated them in this industry. You must remove the problems. You can't have a stone in your skin and think that by putting on a bandage, you will heal that wound. You must pull out the stone, cleanse it, and then put the bandage on in order for the healing process to take place. The ex-mine workers, yes, there's an attempt by both the NUM and the Chamber that we are trying to address the plight of the ex-mine workers because we know many of them are affected by silicosis. The biggest problem there is silicosis. Many of them have passed on already. Many of them are suffering. So there is this joint agreement between us, which is close to the rollout phase. But the answer is not about building clinics. And I have sustained that, we have raised that with the Chamber. The answer is about compensating those people. That's where the answer lies, because you can build as many clinics as you wish. If people don't have food on the table for their dependents, you will never address that inequality and the injustice done to them. You can go where you want to. Now, we have this undertaking between the two parties that we will first measure the size of the event before we can talk random sense. Although the NUM was of the opinion, first money and then we talk the fight. But the Chamber has convinced us, no, let's first look at the gravity thereof and then we can talk money thereafter. Legislation must also be drafted in such a way that it compels the industry that where there's negligence, they must pay, and not the statutory structure that must just give people compensation in terms of the sanction. The employer must be held accountable because it's maximizing its profits through negligence and therefore people are exposed, so they must pay. Those are the, in short, the answers. I hope I have covered all of them, Honorable Chairperson.
What we are going to do is this, comrades, because the time is against us now. We will, start with the summit, the constituency, noting this, that we will have to pursue the issue of the summit. We'll have to write to the presiding officer on this matter. And we'll talk about the date, but it would be something as soon as possible, urgently from us. We'll have to consider that. For us, it won't be a waste of time, in the sense that all of these things we are talking about, the experience of labor, the experience of industry, in this tripartite situation, and of government and parliament in particular. So that if what needs to happen has to do with legislation, it should come out of that summit. That no, tighten this act. This 200,000 is leaking, so tighten that. So it comes out of that. If you have to do something about the directorate itself, it has to come there with the directorate and everybody there and with people who are actually experiencing this thing on a daily basis as working on the field. That's the first thing we are going to do. The second thing we are going to do is to further, perhaps in an isolated way, get these inquest reports from NUM. We will see, because Parliament rises next week. It's rising on Wednesday. Yeah? It's Wednesday. Thursday. So, but next week. It's rising next week. Would have to would write to our counterparts with this inquest, that is the committee, the PPC, on constitutional development, and engage them on this thing, because we would want to know what is happening. But as it relates to other details, other things, for instance, how do you, if there's a rock-based incident, if there's a seismic incident, if the issue is pure negligence or has to do with machinations and all those things, how do we deal with all those things? That would be subject of a thorough engagement, as we planned it, that you don't need one day for that. You need at least a weekend or 2 or 3 days, so that at the end of the day you say, we have isolated what is happening here. We think that in terms of the industry, this is what must happen. In terms of labor, this is what must happen. In terms of legislators, this is what we ought to be doing. Because you remember when all this started, it was then that accident at Northern in Limpopo. I don't know, it was 2001, you know. So we have this thing. So would be helped, would be assisted there so much as a way of moving from here today, to be in a position to even notify some of our colleagues. Because in the final analysis, I mean, NDDP must come in and explain, why are they not prosecuted? Why? I mean, they may have a good reasons, but we'll have to listen. Because hundreds of people are dying, as your example of following up some allegedly 500,000 rands, paying more than 10 million rands. On one individual, as you have said, if that is the reason, and if the reason is about discussing policy resolutions of the ANC as an organization, then dealing with this crisis which faces the industry, what Dr. Barker has said actually corroborated your own concerns, that it is a challenge which is facing the nation. So if it's facing the nation, and if people, judges and everybody, magistrate, takes the thing to the arm of the state, and there's an allegation that there is no movement, we have to take it up. We have no other option. We're not going to be dilly-dallying about it. We must get the facts and know why I think it's not taken up. I think it has been a very refreshing for us interaction. And I would say that it has been a start of our summit. Because this is the kind of things we want, you see, because we do not want to take things, you know, at face value, but we want to go deeper into the entire system and see what then needs to be done to the entire system to correct the issues, so that nobody will feel that his or her issue is not taken up. Give everybody an opportunity to raise issues. So, comrades, thank you very much, members, and our guest comrades from NUM, Chamber, thank you very much. Should we meet again?